I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my Rethinking Learning podcast, where I have conversations with inspirational educators, thought leaders, and change agents. I have someone special here today. This is Rethinking Learning with Katie Martin. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Barbara. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, this is so fun. I always like to start off and tell everyone a little bit about, you know, about you. So I'm just going to boast about you a little bit. Is that okay?
That's all right.
So she served as a middle school English language teacher, a literacy coach, a new teacher mentor, a university instructor, and coordinator of district programs. Is that all?
That's all that fits. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So I've known Katie, I don't even know how long, because we've kind of followed different paths together. And I've known about your passion to create experiences that empower all learners to thrive in a changing world. Ah, that's what we're going to talk about. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you so much, Barbara. Yeah, I think we've known each other somehow in the last 5 years. Our paths have crossed in many different places, and our passions certainly align.
So I always ask everyone to tell a little bit about themselves, their family, and where they live. And you have a beautiful family, so you have to talk about them.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. I do think they're pretty special. So we currently live in San Diego, California, and I grew up here for most of my life, but I met my husband in Hawaii. After I graduated college, I moved out to Hawaii to teach, just thought it sounded like a good idea, and luckily he did also, and we met teaching three doors down from each other. He was a seventh grade science teacher, and I was a seventh grade English language arts teacher. And our new teacher mentor actually introduced us. And I thought, well, I just want to hear about what's happening at school. I didn't really think about a new relationship. But eventually he convinced me that we should actually go out on a date. And so it was fun. And we kept it a secret from our students for the first year. And they were loving it when they found out we were dating. So anyway, we ended up staying there. And we have two kids, Abby and Zach, and they were born in Hawaii. And by the time they were about ready to start school, and we had been there for about 10 years, we decided it was time to move back to San Diego. And my husband, Matt, got a job teaching at High Tech High, which allowed us to come back to San Diego. And we were fortunate to be closer to my family. So we love it here, and it's been a great, great chance. And now my kids are in second and third grade, and it's really fun to see them grow up and see school and learning through their eyes, for sure.
Oh, it's fun since we all know about school and we were learners ourselves. So, you know, I started asking people this, and it is kind of interesting what it was like when you were a learner.
Yeah, I was not your typical teacher that lined up all your stuffed animals and wanted to present and teach class. My mom is a first grade teacher, and so I spent a lot of time in her class. And she's an amazing, amazing teacher and was doing much of this, you know, maker spaces and using technology and all that 20, 30 years ago. So I learned a lot from her, but I wasn't experiencing the same type of learning in my own classrooms when I was a student. I think very early on in third grade, I remember thinking, how much longer do I have to be in school? This is horrible. And the reason I say that is I remember my teacher telling me I have to read The Mouse and the Motorcycle. That book always sticks out to me because it was the first time a teacher said, you have to read this book, read this chapter, tell me what you think. And I was just not inspired by that at all. And so I really chose, I had this strong aversion to reading and just kind of did what I needed to do to get by. I always got A's and B's, but was never really motivated and passionate about, filling in multiple choice worksheets. It just didn't do it for me. So that really, I just thought, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be a teacher. But as life kind of turned around, it turned out to be kind of the only thing that was meant for me to be a teacher. And I wanted to be a language arts teacher, especially so I could help my students think differently about their own reading and their own voice in the world.
Well, you know, most people I talk to, they all go through the same experiences. I was in the same experience. They said I had a reading problem and put me in reading classes. And I kept wondering why they were doing that because I loved reading. I came from a house of readers. We had books all over. It was the same. You just brought up the reason. I hated the books they gave me. And then they would tell you to read a little bit and then take these multiple choice questions. And that you just hit it why I didn't like it.
Yep. And I always joked, I wrote a blog post about this, but you know, I thought to my teachers, how do they know what the author's thinking? Did they call the author? Right? Like it never made sense to me that there was only one right answer. And turns out there's not.
Well, we know that now because, you know, you've talked about your background, you know, teaching in Hawaii. I mean, it must have been really different when you started. And then you go through the system and you see, I've been reading all the things you're doing and all your posts, and you talk about compliancy, and we did it because we kind of were stuck, but our kids are still doing that, right?
Yeah. As a teacher, when I started in teaching seventh grade, I was handed, you know, a workbook and you're supposed to go through and teach all this. And then I remember looking through the filing cabinets and thinking, I'm not interested in this at all. I don't want to teach this. And thankfully, I had my preparation program, my credential program in California was amazing. And they taught us how to design experiences and thematic units. And so I brought that with me. And thankfully, I was in a space where I either had autonomy to teach what I wanted or just made that autonomy myself. No one was coming in to my classroom. And so I designed lessons for kids that allowed them to pick books they wanted to read, connect with each other. It was fun. They actually started liking to read and enjoying talking to each other about it. And it took a while for us to figure it out, but it's still some of my most memorable moments is just sitting with kids and seeing them pick books and choose things to read that they wanted to and make connections to their own life. It's pretty amazing.
Well, in some of your posts and other things that you write, you talk about the importance of relationships. And is it okay if I mention that I've already started reading the draft of your book? Because you talk about stories of other teachers, but you also talked about your own experience. And one of the things that you said was they don't go deep enough and they don't know how to really do critical thinking because they are filling out worksheets and there's no connection. So, you know, I know you did some things in the beginning to really build those relationships. Can you share those?
Sure. I think going back again to, you know, being in the classroom and handed this book, I remember the very first day of school. And one of the things I always say is when I moved to Hawaii, I am, you know, a local San Diego girl. And they said, Katie, they're going to kill you. This one student, he literally said to me, those kids are going to kill you. You're a Haole, which, you know, white person in Hawaiian. And I looked at him and he said, you know, if you build relationships, you'll be okay. And that comment really stuck with me. And I thought, well, what else would I do? And so from day one, I really pushed aside the pacing guide. And not to say I didn't focus on standards, but I didn't go over the syllabus the first day. I spent the time getting to know the kids, telling them about who I was so they would know that I cared. You know, those first couple days paid off. People say, don't smile until Christmas or make sure you go over the syllabus and all of those horrible lessons that, you know, people tell us about teaching. Really, I found that if I just connected with the people in the room, the kids I was teaching, got to know who they were, everything else became so much easier. We didn't spend all the day going over the rules and what we couldn't do. We talked about how we wanted to treat each other, how we wanted to learn, how we wanted to interact. And then we held each other accountable to that. And then we were able, once we had that relationship, we were able to go into the content. Sometimes it was hard. Sometimes it was challenging. And it wasn't always, you know, perfect and roses. But because we had that foundation, we could deal with things much easier. And I remember, you know, they're seventh grade. Things get a little out of control once in a while. And they get frustrated just because we have a relationship doesn't mean they're having a good day. And things at home aren't challenging. So we would have class meetings. We would stop and say, what's working? What's not? And really try and figure out once every once in a while when things got out of control or weren't going the way we wanted, we would always come back and try and figure it out as a class.
Well, it sure made a difference because I know that, you know that, but we still have teachers that still think that they have to meet all the criteria, you know, everything in the pacing guide at the time they're supposed to do it instead of being more, it's like that personal relationship means so much more than any worksheet or anything that you're really teaching in the curriculum, because they will remember that. They will never, I don't know anyone who remembers, you know, that worksheet I did in third grade was so cool. You know what I mean? It's not going to get it.
Well, and, you know, I spend a lot of time with teachers, spend a lot of time in schools. I kind of go crazy if I don't. But this group of teachers I was working with once told me, you know, well, those are all great ideas. We were talking about all these different things they could do in their classrooms and all the ideas they had. And then they said, well, we can't do that, though. Our principal won't let us. The pacing guide, you know, and they had all these, and I don't want to say excuses, they're realities. But I pushed back and said, are you sure that you can't do it? Like, have you asked? And it was like, well, no, but we're pretty sure that this is how it's supposed to be. So as we kind of pushed, a lot of these barriers and expectations that we think exist aren't really there. And so another teacher piped up and she said, well, I don't teach that way. I went to my principal and told him I had a better way. And he said, great. So I think that so many teachers who are really making a difference and choosing to do things differently, it's because they're asking questions, they're pushing boundaries, and they're really trying new things. They're not waiting back and expecting, you know, that things have to be the way they've always been. And so I just think that the more we can think about who's in the classroom and really talk to principals, the more teachers and principals talk to each other about the type of learning they want to see in the classroom, the better we're all going to be. Principals will say, I wish my teachers would do this. And teachers will say, I wish my principals would do that. But they never share that with one another. They want the same things in so many cases, but they're assuming that the other half can't do it or won't do it. And those assumptions prevent us from really powerful learning.
Well, you were a coach. So you worked, right, in a mentor.
Yeah.
You worked with teachers. So where did you do that? Did you do that in Hawaii or San Diego?
In Hawaii, yep. I was a literacy coach and at the district level.
Some of the things that you, because I was a coach. Yeah, you know. And one of the things I had to do is develop that relationship with that teacher. And a lot of times it has to be job embedded. It has to be there in the class so they can be really alone to say their fears or their concerns. And a lot of time there's not that opportunity. How did you build those relationships?
Well, like a lot of things, I learned through trial and error. And my first year out of the classroom, I made a lot of mistakes just because I didn't really know. There was no expectation for the job. And I think we're getting a little clearer on what coaching should and could look like. But I was the first coach in the school. And I came out of the classroom and thought, these teachers are working so hard. I'm just going to give them all my lessons and make it easier on everybody. Well, you're laughing because you know that didn't work, right?
No. Like, yeah.
That didn't work. They were my lessons and my ideas. And just because they worked with my kids in my classroom didn't mean they were going to work for the rest of my colleagues, even though we were in the same school. So as I started to learn and figure out that that wasn't the right way to do it, is adding more to people. I was just adding more work. So I started pulling them together and really figuring out how to help them solve their problems. And it felt awkward at first, like I needed to be doing more work, right? Because I didn't ever want the teachers to think that I wasn't working as hard as they were. But the more I could go up, you know, work alongside these teachers and my peers and help them solve their problems and help them get the resources and remove barriers, the better off we ended up being. The other thing I learned is you can't sit in your office and wait for someone to come to you. You know, you talk about that relationship. Their teachers are so darn busy. They are so much going on. And if they don't know that someone is right there and there's not a time or a system to actually coach and do the work, it can be pushed to the side. You know, it's something that's necessary and it's something that is research has shown over and over again is helpful in shifting practice. But it's not going to happen if there's not a system in place for it. So for the teachers I was coaching, I had them set up their questions and their challenges that they wanted to solve. But then we set up regular, consistent meetings where I could go into their classrooms. We could spend time, you know, talking about what they wanted, what was working, what wasn't. But if we didn't set that time up and we weren't consistent about it, it didn't happen. No matter how much we wanted it to, it didn't happen.
I can relate. I found I had so many mistakes in coaching because I've been doing this for 30 years. And in the beginning, they thought I was more like a trainer. You know, I'd come in and I'd give them, like you said, give them all the lessons and then they do it. But I was actually an ed tech coach working with different technology that they had given them. And I walked in one class and there were four computers with plastic bags over them. And I said, oh, that's interesting. Is that to keep the dust off? And she says, no, if I can't see them, I don't have to use them. And I went, oh, I think we need to sit down and talk. But that you can be in a room with them with a whole bunch of teachers and they're not going to pipe up and say, I'm nervous, I'm scared. They're going to do that face to face.
Right. And like you said, with consistency over time, they have to see that you care. They have to see that you want to help them, you know, and there's a lot of tension between coaching and evaluating. And so that has to be clear what the role is and what the goal is. And then they have to see that you're serious about it and that you'll show up for them. You know, coaching, it is. It's primarily about the relationship. And I think the other piece of that that I've learned and that I did a lot in worked on in my dissertation was this buddy mentoring. A lot of times it's like you can be friends and we get stuck in just the relationship. The relationship is the foundation, but it's not the end goal. The end goal is that we're changing how kids are learning in school. We're changing the practice of educators and what happens in the classroom. And that relationship is foundational, but it can't just be about how are you doing? Hope you had a good day. It's really has to be about teaching and learning.
Well, I met you. One of the places I met you was at Digital Promise. And one of the things that I find is if we can somehow shift the learning so they understand that it's their personal, professional learning and that they can do it if they have the opportunity and the resources. And it's nice to have someone like you or a coach that can help nudge them along.
Yeah, I mean, it really is about knowing your goal, knowing what you're trying to accomplish. And then the pathway can vary. You know, there's different supports along the way. There's different resources. But if we're not clear about where we're going, we can just start getting off on all these different tangents and try this new tool and this new app. And then it really doesn't always have the impact that we want it to have on actual kids learning and growth.
Well, it's like going to one of the smash ups and they show you like 30 or 60 apps and you're going, I'm not even sure. That went by so fast. I don't even know what's going on. And that's going to happen with coaching.
Yeah.
It can happen in professional development, you know, in workshops. They think, well, that's cool, but I really want to see how it applies to me. Because I talk to people all over and I've done a lot of work similar to yours. And what I find is that I'm asked sometimes to come in and help, but only help these three teachers.
Yeah.
That's not going to do it. We got to really make the change. You have to change the culture. You have to have an environment that allows risk taking. And, you know, and making mistakes and learning from those. They don't do that, you know?
Right. Well, and just I think what you said, Barbara, like just these three teachers, or if you just tell my teachers what to do, it'll be okay. You know, anytime that it's you're pushing it on someone else, the red flags go up for me. And so a lot of times when I'm working with leadership teams, it's what can you do? You know, talk about what is in your sphere of influence, because it's overwhelming if you say transform the whole system. Right? It's too much, right? We have to start somewhere small, somewhere within our control, but it's not about what someone else needs to do. It's about what can you do in your current role, in your current situation to make those changes you want to see.
Well, that's probably why you wrote your book, right?
It is why I wrote a book.
Yeah. So I'm just going to tell what the title is. It's called Creating Experiences That Ignite Curiosity, Develop Passion, and Unleash Genius. What I like is that you not only shared your ideas, you brought in so many examples of so many people I know, but a lot I don't know. And it was from leaders and teachers and people that had made the mistakes and what they learned from them. It's just wonderful.
Oh, well, I mean, thank you. And this really is a book for me about my, at the core, my hopes and dreams for my kids and what I want them to experience as I see them go through school and I see, you know, second, third grade where we start to see nationally in, you know, engagement in school start to decrease. I see that in their future. And I'm watching them and seeing how they learn at school. I'm seeing how school is organized. And there's some really great things they're doing. And there's some things that I think as a whole that we can do better. You know, my background in research is, you know, at the university and then, you know, through school, I'm always trying to figure out how to connect research to practice. And that iterative space is really intriguing to me. But it's always about context. So it's not like, here, this research practice works, let's go and put it in a school and everything's going to be fixed. I'm always trying to figure out what works in each unique context. So this book is about, at the core, what I want, my hopes and dreams, but also it's about what I've learned through so many amazing teachers and leaders and people who are starting to do this work and showing us what's possible in our schools. If we start looking at what we want and what's possible rather than what we've always done.
Well, you start with your first chapter is What If?
Yep.
I love it. And you bring up, you start off with Rosa Parks. What if I say I'm not sitting at the back of the bus? What if we have an actual voice in what we do? And that's the problem, is that we've taken our kids' voices away, right? Starting in kindergarten, maybe even before, we tell them what to do. And that has to stop.
I hear so much, and especially in project-based learning, well, my kids need to know all the facts first. We need to tell them all the information before they can do anything. And, you know, many people have pointed this out, but one of my favorite analogies is we don't tell kids, we don't spend, you know, Little League pitching all, you know, the whole season pitching and then the next season batting and the next season fielding. You play the game, you learn how to play the game, and you figure it out as you go, and you use those skills and develop them throughout the game. And if we continue to think we have to fill our kids with all the information and make sure that they can fill out the worksheet before they can do anything meaningful, we're going to lose them way too early. You know, and I'm dealing this with my son. It's very raw and real. He said to me this morning, Mom, can you just homeschool me? You know, I hate school. And I think they go up and down, of course, but I think that he sees, like you said, he doesn't have a voice and he has to do worksheets at times. And he's not seeing the connection between his life and what he wants to do, even in second grade. And that's hard. That's hard as a mom to see. And I see so many kids experience that in our classrooms still.
Well, what's sad is second grade. I mean, I know that we lose them, you know, around fifth, sixth, and really, you know, when they get to middle school and high school, they just want to do school and get out of school. And the idea of project-based learning, what I love is that it's multidisciplinary. I can't even talk this morning. It's that approach where you're making it real world. It makes sense to them because it is thematic. And you're pulling in facts, you're pulling in research, you're pulling in all of the things that need to be possibly covered. But do we really have to cover everything?
No. Yeah. And I think that's a tension we need to talk about. And that goes back to those conversations. What is it that we want kids to leave with? I was talking with a group recently and they were talking about their AP test and their AP teachers. And they didn't want to change the schedule because the kids would forget the information within the 3 months before the AP test. And I just think, let's think about that for a minute. If you're not going to hold on to information for 3 months, maybe we should think about how we're teaching it. Because if we can't hold on to it for 3 months, what's the purpose? What is our goal, right? Like, what do you want kids to know and do? And so I just think that the more we can focus on how we learn, I've never met an adult, a kid, who talked about learning best by worksheets or memorizing something. Whenever I ask people to think about their most powerful learning experiences, their real world, their hands-on, their struggle, there's reflection. And when people think about how they learn, we often recognize this disconnect in schools. And our system was designed, as many people have said, you know, 100 years ago, by people, though. The point is, people designed this. And we, as people, can design it for a better world. For, you know, we can design a better system for the world we live in and the things we want our kids to know and do.
Well, Katie, I could talk to you forever on this. I do want to just bring up one more thing about your book, because it, I don't know when we're going to actually publish the post, podcast, and the, we put a blog post together with resources and links and maybe even some of the pictures just to kind of tease them. The piece that got me are the personal stories from you about your own children. And I'm glad you talked about Zach and Abby. Abby is your, yeah. And, it's all about our kids. That's what it's, that's why we're doing this.
That's why we do it. You know, and I see, like I said, for my own kids, but I want that for all kids. You know what I want? It's something that when I see, I just see kids in the classroom, I think they, I want to see that all of them have their voice and all of them feel like they have a place in this world. So,
well, we're going to, it, like I said, we have to be able to talk a little bit more, maybe at another one, about some of the projects that people are doing and how people can actually be involved and take some of those projects to make them personal for their own kids. That's the problem. Like you said, you brought up something right in the beginning, was how I used to do that. I used to give people lessons and then they wouldn't do them.
It's amazing.
But then there's all these lesson plan sites that people send them to. You know what I mean? Maybe we need to rethink what we're doing, right?
Yep. Content does not change behavior. You can't just give people stuff and have them change. People have to try things out for themselves. So we got to involve people in the process.
Oh, well, I'm ending there. That was, that's the quote I'm going to use. Thank you so much, Katie. This has just been, every time I see you, I want to talk to you.
You're amazing, Barbara. Yeah, thank you so much for doing this. I love talking to you too and hearing your ideas. We'll have to, I can't wait till we get to see each other again.
Well, we will. We will. Thank you so much, Katie. This has been wonderful.
Thank you.
Bye for now. Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Katie Martin. Katie's doing a lot of fun things now. She's working for Alt School. Her book, Learner-Centered Innovation, is a big hit. And we created a complimentary blog post to go with the podcast. So make sure you go there to check out all the resources and links. Please subscribe, you know, to the podcast also. And it's on iTunes and VoiceEd Canada and a lot of other places. You can also subscribe to my website, barbarabray.net, and that way you receive announcements and updates so you don't miss any of the conversations.